Right now, when was the last time you picked up a pen, found a piece of stationery, and sat down to write a letter? With today's speed of communications from email to cell phones to answering machines, the time involved to write a letter can seem too cumbersome, too time-consuming, and way too slow. Yet, where would today's biographers be without the saved letters and correspondence of the famous people they write about? Well, if you've ever written to or received a letter from a celebrated person, give us a call and tell us about it. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Longtime broadcaster Charles Osgood has collected what he calls funny letters from famous people. Many of you know him as host of CBS Radio's The Osgood File and CBS Television's Sunday Morning. Charles Osgood joins us from our bureau in New York, and thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
Let's get right to it. Give us a good example of a funny letter from a famous person.
Okay, well, there are a couple of short ones here that I think will serve the purpose. This is an exchange of notes between George Bernard Shaw and Winston Churchill. A play of Shaw's was opening, and he sent this message to Churchill: "Have reserved two tickets for my first night. Come and bring a friend, if you have one." And Churchill's reply was this: "Impossible to come first night. We'll come second night, if you have one."
Now, you have collected a wide range of letters from a wide range of people, arranged in different categories. And in the start of this program, we used an excerpt from you've written some pieces of doggerel, and I should explain, Charles Osgood is the one who's ruined doggerel for the rest of us, the way, I guess, Shakespeare ruined the sonnet for everybody who tried to come afterwards. And if you'll permit me, I will read your doggerel on authors. "When a writer writes a letter, it's likely to be better than one by someone you can tell does not put words together well. Authors do that for a living. That's one reason I'm giving for putting tellers of good stories among my letter categories. Authors can be very funny when they're not writing for the money, for the glory or the fame or the critical acclaim. I like it when the words they use are chosen purely to amuse, when they write a funny letter to entertain the letter getter." And I was wondering if you could follow that up by reading the letter of one of your authors, Washington Irving, on page 75 in your book, who talked about the burdens of reciprocal correspondence.
Ah, yes. He believed that there was more than some could bear. Washington Irving was one of those people. In 1828, he wrote a letter like that to Antoinette Beauvier. "Oh, this continually accumulating debt of correspondence, it grows while we sleep and recurs as fast as we can pay it off. Would that I had the turn and taste for letter writing of our friend the Prince, to whom it seems a perfect delight. Who, like an industrious spider, can sit in that little dark room and spin out a web of pleasant fancies from his own brain? Or rather, to make a more gracious comparison, like a honeybee goes humming about the world, and when he has visited every flower, returns, buzz, 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 to his little hive, and works all that he has collected into a perfect honeycomb of a letter. For my part, I know no greater delight than to receive letters, but the replying to them is a grievous tax upon my negligent nature. I sometimes think one of the greatest blessings we shall enjoy in heaven will be to receive letters by every post and never be obliged to reply to them. With the greatest regard, your friend, Washington Irving."
Now, that indeed addresses one of the great problems of correspondence, does it not?
Yes, it does. And I think some people do carry this to extremes. You know, somebody sends you a letter thanking you for having dinner or something of the sort. And then you don't respond to that letter, and they'll take you to task for it. They'll say, you know, you never replied to my letter thanking you for the dinner. I mean, it's got to stop somewhere, it seems to me.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go to Esther, who joins us from Chesterland, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I'm glad to get on.
Sure.
Wondered if anybody still remembered Shirley Temple.
Indeed.
Oh, you do?
Absolutely, on the Good Ship Lollipop, if nowhere else.
Yes, that's when I first saw her, was that movie that was in, and I fell in love with her and loved her all the way through her little career. But when I was about 8 years old, I was taking piano lessons. My father was a musician, and I sat down and wrote two little pieces. One was called the Shirley Temple Waltz, and one was called the Shirley Temple Dance. And my father wrote them down, made the manuscript on them, and sent them to her. And I have two letters of thanks from Shirley in her own writing. I still have them.
Really?
Yeah.
Were they funny?
No, they were just very straightforward. Dear Esther, thank you for the Shirley Temple waltz and the Shirley Temple dance. I liked them very much. Love, Shirley.
Well, did she ever dance to them? Or?
Oh, my God.
Do you remember the songs?
I wish I could, but my father just wrote them down, and, you know, we didn't have copying machines in those days. He didn't copy and save copies for us. He just wrote them down.
Well, it's probably a good thing you don't, because if you did, I'd make you sing it.
They're probably pretty elementary.
Well, thanks very much, Esther.
Surely enough.
Okay.
Nice talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have a lot of letters, Charles, from people who you don't think of as very funny. Herbert Hoover, for example.
Yes.
He had a young visitor to the White House who was invited to join the president for lunch, and sometime later you write, Hoover received a note from the boy telling him that nobody in the boy's hometown believed that he had actually dined with the president or that spinach had been served at the White House, and you have Hoover's response.
So I do. He said, "My dear Stephen, this is to certify that you lunched at the White House with me. I have never been strong for spinach myself, and I had meant to tell you that you didn't have to eat it." Herbert Hoover.
I guess that predates the first President Bush's aversion to broccoli.
Yes, I guess so. Yeah. He also, Hoover wrote another letter, which happens to be on the same page, on a subject that we have other letters about, which is autograph hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Another child had written to him asking for his autograph, and he wrote back, "I was delighted to see that you were not a professional autograph hunter. Once upon a time, one of those asked me for 3 autographs. I inquired why, and he said, 'It takes 2 of yours to get 1 of Babe Ruth's.'"
Wait, was that after Babe Ruth remarked there was that question about the president? He was making more money than the president. He said, "I had a better year than he did."
Yeah, it must have been about the same time, I imagine.
Yeah. Let's go now to Nora, who joins us from Muskegon, Michigan.
Hi. My brother-in-law and I were great fans of Dave Barry, the journalist and author from Miami. And Bill was not happy with one of his books. He thought it wasn't quite up to par with the other one, so he wrote him a letter about it. And Dave replied with a postcard and said he thanked him for his criticism. And to pay him for it, he had attached a check for $1,000 to the postcard.
Wow.
That tells you something, which is that Dave Barry's must make a lot of money.
Well, no, it was a postcard, and he said he attached a check to it.
Oh. Well, that Dave Barry gets us all the time, doesn't he?
Well, I think he is one of my favorites. I read Dave Barry every chance I get, and he almost never fails to make me laugh out loud.
Yes, I think he's excellent.
Thanks very much for the call, Nora.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got from Shannon in San Francisco. When I was about 8 or 9, I wrote a letter to Bill Berge, a linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles. I didn't watch football at the time, but our teacher had told us he'd hurt his knee, and I thought I'd send him a card to cheer him up. I asked for a picture, assuring Mr. Berge that if he sent one, I'd hang it on my bulletin board with all my other celebrity pictures. A short time later, I received a postcard with his photo on the front and on the back. He, or maybe an assistant, had scrawled, "I'm honored to be included with the Dukes of Hazzard." We're talking to Charles Osgood about his new book, Funny Letters from Famous People, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Charles Osgood, how did you get involved in this project? How did it get started?
Well, most of my books have been didn't start out being books. They started out being radio pieces or newspaper columns or maybe pieces for television even. But the last book that I did was a collection of World War II humor, which went under the name of Kilroy Was Here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people at Broadway Books had seen that and had been thinking themselves about a collection of letters and thought I might be the man to edit it and pick out the ones that they had done a tremendous amount of research on this. I'm not even sure you can call this research. There was a huge, I mean enormous box full of copies of letters, and not arranged in any particular fashion. So I was the one who decided to find those categories of things that made people famous, you know, politics, mm-hmm. or show business or writing, and those were the categories that we picked. The arts, also of course, and so I spent quite a bit of time culling this down. If I had used them all, it would have been about 10 volumes, I think, and each one would have been much thicker than this book is, mm-hmm. but. That was the idea, so I went through it. I wrote a little introductory poem and then poems for each section and a certain amount of connective tissue between the letters. But this is what came out. And my only test, well, there were two tests, actually. The people actually had to be famous, which is to say I had to have heard of them. And they had to be funny, which is to say I had to laugh. And those were the simple tests we applied.
Well, let's see if we get a funny letter from Tina, who joins us on the line from Philadelphia.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, my story began, I think it was 1986, I forget which tour it was, but I was in South Beach at a restaurant called The Strand, and in walks the band U2. And so my friend and I, we decided we were going to buy them all drinks, and we did, and a line proceeded to form around them wanting their attention, and I went up to Bono and said, I know of a bar where everybody's so drunk no one will recognize you. So he said, really? And I said, yes, and they have a pool table, even though I knew at the time that the pool table was not in operation. So they were. He was interested, and it turned out that him and the guitarist Edge came up to me after they were done at their dinner and said, yeah, we're ready to go to that bar. And So he says, we just have to, you know, let our bodyguard know. And the guy says, no way. And I said, come on, don't worry about it, they'll be fine. So they came out with me and my friend, and we proceeded to do tequila shots. And it turns out a couple of drunks did recognize them and tried to start a fight and everything. And then after that, I took them to a strip club. and about a week later, I got a letter from Edge. You know, and I thought this was just par for the course with your average rock band, you know. And anyways, I got a letter a week later from the Edge from his next, or I don't know, later show in Phoenix, I think it was, or Tucson, Arizona. And he writes to me, he says, it was a wild time that we had. I have a hard time believing it actually happened. And I thought that was so peculiar coming from a rock star. So I guess I was wilder than he was. I don't know.
And did you keep that letter to me?
I've got it somewhere.
You know, I wish I only got one letter from anybody that's in this book. I got a letter from George Bush the Elder, and it was on his 65th birthday, and I had written a little poem about how you know, life does not end at the age of 65, and darn if I didn't get a little note back on White House stationery, and he had done a little rhyme, and I was of course thrilled to get it, but I don't have it. I have no idea what happened to it, and so. So it's a good idea to hold on to a letter if it's from a president or from a rock star.
Will it be worth something someday?
Who knows?
The story's worth a lot, though, Tina.
Yeah, I'm thinking about writing it up.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We just wanted to read this email we got from Kurt Frank in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Years ago in the early 70s, the news was reported that Groucho Marx was ill and had been hospitalized. My brother Keith, a freshman in high school, sent Groucho a get-well card. In the card, Keith explained what a fan he was and how he had just won the Minnesota State Declamation Competition. In a humorous interpretation for the competition, he'd presented a Groucho Marx routine, and it was wonderful. A few weeks later, Keith received an envelope in the mail, and in it was an autographed photo of Groucho and the sentiment, "To Keith, where's my 10%? Groucho." Now, Groucho could have filled a book by himself.
Yes, we do have some of his efforts in the book. I'm just looking at the Groucho Marx letters. They tend to be long. Mm-hmm. But so let me just do a part of one. His wit was, of course, everybody knows about Groucho Marx. In 1946,
it's going to have to be very short.
Well then we better not start it.
Okay. Yeah, then you're going to have to read the book. Always leave them wanting more. Charles Osgood, thank you very much for being with us. There is one short enough that we could do, you know, sort of the pre-equivalent to email was T-mail, telegraphs. Wasn't it Robert Benchley who sent a telegram to David Niven from Venice?
He did not travel very much, but he did go to Europe once, and he sent this message to his friend, which said, "Arrived Venice, streets full of water, please advise."
Charles Osgood is the host of CBS Radio's The Osgood File and CBS TV's Sunday Morning. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
His book is Funny Letters from Famous People. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation.